Hi, welcome to episode 31 of the Woke-ish podcast. This is Ebony.
And this is Zelma.
And this week we will be discussing the woke holiday.
Yeah.
What it means to be quote unquote woke and go home for the holidays and interact with family and friends who aren't.
Yeah. Or even do I need to have a woke holiday?
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes. Yes. Is that even necessary? Like, can you shut it off and go home and listen to your uncle say, you know, sort of problematic and ignorant stuff and still be who you are and not have this like internal conflict?
Yes.
But before we get there, wanted to apologize for this episode being late. So we technically did not have an episode last week, because I was out of town for a research conference and,
But not just out of town, out of the country.
Yes, out of the town, out of the country for a research conference, which, my partner and I kind of made into a vacation. But we also ended up getting back a lot later than we were supposed to originally because we missed our, first flight and had to rebook, and ended up, you know, having to stay longer. So yes, apologies. That was my fault. So now let's dive into our shout out segment.
Yeah. So the first shout out is, so I just saw The Hate U Give.
So good, right?
And I usually don't shout out movies, but it was so good. Not only, you know, of course, this would be like right up my alley, given, you know, how much we talk about police brutality mm-hmm. and racial profiling, but it was just overall great, like great acting. I mean, Issa Rae was in it, yeah. Common. But I just loved, even like the younger actors and actresses. And I'm not going to give any spoilers, but it wasn't the everything ends up happy as happy and everything is resolved and the world goes on. It was more like a realistic glimpse of, well, bad shit happens. Yeah. And then what do you do about it?
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that. It was the Tupac reference.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize, like, that was, I mean, I listened to Tupac, but not, like, as, I guess, intently as other people do. And mm-hmm. so the whole reference to his song and him saying The Hate U Give and what it means, and I was just like, oh, wow, like, that's really great. And it's really sad, too, like, so much time after his, you know, that he said this and we're still kind of having the same battles.
Yeah. No, I thought the movie was great, right? But I never thought that I would be one of these people, but like having read the book and I was trying, I found myself like as the movie was going on trying to like, oh, did they get this? Did they get that? I mean, I felt like one, they did a really good job casting the main character, for Amandla Stenberg. And I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her last name right. But I've been a huge fan of hers since like The Hunger Games, since she was like little. And so to see like her evolution as an actress and, you know, the way that she played this role, I bought it, you know, I thought it, like she did a really good job selling it. Yeah. And I mean, I'm glad that movies like this are coming out and are being so well received. Because when I went, there were like a lot of white people in there watching it and I was happy to see that. And I was like, okay, I wonder if this resonates with, I mean, it can't resonate with them in the same way that it does for, you know, the black people sitting in here. But mm-hmm. I wonder if they are making the connections between like, you know, what's happening in this movie and like, oh, this is real life for some people.
Yeah.
You know, it may be fiction for us or it may feel like fiction to us, but for some of the people sitting in here, like this is, this is real life and this is painful to watch, you know?
Yeah.
Because I mean, I teared up cried reading the book and then seeing it was like
I cried.
Yeah.
It was hard to get through in the beginning with the talk.
Yeah.
I was like, I remember talking to my brother but not even being able to imagine like I mean it's you know, Latino and black people are both racially profiled, but I think like not to the same extent.
Yeah.
And so being like, oh my gosh, can you imagine being like 7 and your dad is like talking to you about this and it's a real ass conversation. I was just like, and now being a mom, I'm like, oh my God, I can't even, I'm like, am I going to have this talk? And, like, it depends on what he looks like and how dark he looks. And just being like, man, and so many people don't even know that these conversations happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's the thing is, like, I wonder if the white people in there were like, oh, wow, I didn't know that black people did this. Or if they see it as like, oh, this is just like fantasy, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, this is like real life.
Yeah. Like, for me, it was like, oh, this isn't normal. Yeah. It was like, oh, they're highlighting this. This must be different. Oh my gosh, not everyone has this talk. Yeah. And then being like, oh shit, like that's crazy.
Yeah. 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 Some people just get to live their lives and they never, I mean, the only talk they get is the birds and the bees.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the second shout out goes to the Dutch rail company NS because they have agreed to pay compensation for its role in transporting Jewish people to concentration camps. So they agreed to set up a commission to compensate Holocaust survivors and their relatives for transporting them to Nazi transit camps, I think it's great because and, you know, some people are like, oh, it's so late. And it's like not really about the money. It's about the recognition mm-hmm. of whatever part you played, owning up to it and saying like it was wrong. But even if we didn't kill these people or we were just like a third party, we recognize that our role in that, we could have not done that.
Yeah.
And so shout out to them. And hopefully, you know, this... people in Europe, some countries in Europe just have such a more progressive way of dealing with owning up to a lot of shit that they do. Mm-hmm. And it would just be great if we could get some of that over here. Yeah.
I think the Netherlands is like really at the forefront of some of that, like, and like Sweden and all those countries, like they, you know, I mean, countries that have like universal healthcare and paternity leave
and like women and, like, as mandated prime ministers.
Yeah, it's like, okay, they figured something out that we haven't quite figured out yet. So shout out to them. Okay, and then our third shout out. So according to Deadline.com, hip hop artist and Academy Award winner Commons Freedom Road Productions, in conjunction with Lionsgate Entertainment, has optioned the rights to Barracoon, the story of the last black cargo, the recently discovered book by Zora Neale Hurston, to develop as a limited television event series. So Barracoon centers on an 86-year-old Cujo Lewis, who Hurston identified as the last known formerly enslaved person to survive the Middle Passage. Hurston's book chronicles Cujo's time of slavery and the profound complexities of Reconstruction and freedom after the Atlantic slave trade was abolished. This is the second project to emerge from Lionsgate and Freedom Road's TV deal. They are already developing the Saturday Night Knife and Gun Club TV adaption, starring and produced by Common. So Barracoon is a book that I have not finished, but am about halfway through, and it is hard to get through. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, I mean, before this TV adaption comes out, hopefully I will have finished it. But if anybody listening is looking for a new book to get into, you know, a nonfiction, I would definitely recommend it. And so I'm glad that, again, like, you know, stuff, I mean, I've heard people say that they're tired of, you know, things like about slavery coming out, and I get that. And so for those people, I guess this wouldn't be for you, but for others that are interested in seeing how something that isn't dramatized, but, you know, actually comes from the words of someone who was enslaved themselves, would look like in a TV adaption, like someone like me. You know, I guess this is for us. And yeah, I mean, I'm glad that things like this are being picked up, and which to me is like, so is the reason why it's so important that people like Common, have, you know, are in positions of power like this, where he can say, you know, I'm deciding that my production company is going to produce this television series. And so even if a major production company, like, I don't know, Warner Brothers or something, won't pick up something like this, we have people of color that are stepping into positions where they can.
And to give voices. It's one thing to, like, have, you know, white people, as well-meaning as they are, mm-hmm. tell the story of people of color, but another to have people of color involved in the telling of the story.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, last shout out. So Washington and Lee University in Lexington, Virginia, replaced a slaveholder's name on a building with John Chavis, who was the first Black person to graduate college in the U.S. So the university will make changes to two buildings, Robinson Hall and Lee Chapel, after a student and faculty committee issued a report on how the university's history is represented on campus. The committee was created after white supremacists railed at University of Virginia in Charlottesville last year. So Robinson Hall was originally named for John Robinson, a founder of the university. When Robinson died, he left his estate, farm, and 73 slaves to the college. In 1836, the college sold the slaves and used the money to build Robinson Hall. Additionally, the university will make changes to Lee Chapel. The university will replace the portraits of Robert E. Lee and George Washington in military uniforms with new portraits of the two men in civilian clothing. Also, the doors of the statue chamber in Lee Chapel will be closed during university events. However, Lee Chapel will keep its name because Robert E. Lee is buried below the chapel.
Which is really weird.
Yeah. It's so weird, right?
The Confederacy.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. And so, I mean, I was kind of like, you know, is like a little bit, I was a little bit half-hearted about giving this shout out because I'm like, well, you're going to take down the portraits of them in military garb, but then replace it with them in civilian clothing.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I guess it's, you know, so that they don't, they aren't really directly paying homage to the Confederacy by having them like in Confederate uniforms up there, but it's like, we're still gonna have Robert E. Lee.
Yeah.
We're still gonna maintain the name of the chapel and, you know, keep his portrait up here, I guess, because his body is buried beneath the building.
I guess that'd be the only reason I would be. I'm not gonna go there.
Yeah, I mean, I had to look up where this university was.
He's buried under the chapel where you pray. No,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really weird. But I mean, I guess they are. I guess it's nice to know that the university is open to student and faculty protest. Even if their response is somewhat limited, and does come with like, you know, some caveats.
Yeah.
Okay, so now for our In the Know segment. So this article was hard to get through as, you know, a PhD student. It was like when you see all of your truths kind of being thrown at you in your face. But the Atlantic online magazine, journal, newspaper, something. I don't know how they categorize themselves, but published an article about grad school's impact on mental health. So they found, or I guess suggest, that PhD candidates suffer from anxiety, depression, and suicidal ideation at astonishingly high rates. So I guess for like us, like as I was going through it, like it wasn't surprising. It's just like, oh wow, you know, it's not just us in this department that, you know, suffer from, you know, certain like mental health issues. It's like, this is a nationwide or institution-wide issue.
Yeah.
So the doctoral degree experience often consists of intense labor expectations for little pay, and which results in or can result in a lack of sleep and social life. In addition, there is the notorious hierarchy of academia, which often promotes power struggles and tribalism. So to make matters worse, the payoff for all this stress may be delayed. So a 2014 report found that nearly 40%, that's almost half, of the doctoral students surveyed hadn't secured a job at the time of graduation. So for all those listening that are not in grad school, or, I mean, even if you are in grad school, you probably know that this is a reality. You probably know people that have graduated and are either unemployed or underemployed.
Yeah.
But almost 50% of people that spend 5 to 10 years in a PhD program graduate without a job.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's because the pipeline is so bottlenecked. Like you have a bunch of people that are going into grad school because, well, I don't know, job security sucks. And then they finish grad school without enough opportunities for you know, a career, like not enough career opportunities. And I mean, I guess there are several reasons for that, but one, if you want an academic job, you know, if you can harken back to our episode where we talked about whether or not you should apply to grad school, there are only so many academic jobs,
yeah.
and many of them are in places that you would not want to live, like yeah. flyover states in the Midwest. And then you can, or you can go into a job, that maybe doesn't pay you as much as you should be paid for your level of education. I mean, there are a bunch of limitations. I can go on and on and on and on. Ultimately, we are technically not in a recession anymore. And so I do remember that back when we were in the recession, you would see all these articles like, oh, a PhD student is a barista at Starbucks, mm-hmm. you know? And at the time, I mean, I think I was, where was I? I was in high school. And so I didn't even know that this would be my fate. But now it's like, I mean, you have people that are in PhDs that are doing things that like they would not have imagined that they'd be doing.
Yeah.
And then the anticipation of that happening to you is, I think, what leads to a lot of anxiety and depression. So the study's results indicate that many PhD students' mental health troubles are exacerbated, if not caused, by their graduate education experiences. So this is not just that people with anxiety, depression, or suicidal ideation are going into grad yeah. school. So it's not a selection effect. It's that grad school is actually
causing
a lot of these mental health issues.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, it is not wholly accidental. Like, this is the way that I describe being in a PhD program is that it is like a extended hazing experience. You know, you have people that went through it doing the same thing to people that are going through it now, you know? And I mean, that to me is like the most ridiculous part about it. It's not like, you know, this is just happening to us by some unknown, you know, entity. It's like, no, you have faculty that are causing a lot of this stress or creating the culture that causes this stress. Anyways, that's not what this episode is not all about. This episode is not all about this, but I could go on and on. I don't know if you want to say something about that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I had anxiety and depression before I started grad school, and it definitely got worse. And it is because of grad school. And it's not just the workload, it's the culture. Mm-hmm. And
The workload is not even the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not even like, oh my, like, you know, I mean, you anticipate the workload.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think I probably could find a journal back, you know, or something that I wrote about before starting, where it's like, oh, okay, what are your expectations of, you know, this program? And, you know, having to work hard and, you know, spend more time working than I would like, maybe not having as much of a social life. Those are things that I anticipated.
Yeah.
But the constantly being beat down, feeling yeah. like you're less than, like you're not as, yeah. like you're not that smart, like things may not work out for you, like you may end up jobless and unemployed even after being here forever.
Yeah.
Or spending all of your 20s in school. Those are not things that I anticipated.
Yeah. 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 So I'm like not surprised by this article. But also, like, kind of sad that I just don't know how it can get better unless you restructure the whole thing. Yeah. And I just don't see that happening in the next
yeah.
10 to 15 years.
Especially because the people that are the most jaded or are having the hardest time with academia are the people that are least likely to go into academic positions. You know, and so if there are people that would improve the system and a lot of them don't go into grad school, or only a few of them go into grad school, then it's hard. It becomes hard to change the institution from the inside when you're a minority.
Yeah. And I'd like to see, like, how this even looks as professors. So it's like, I can speculate that it doesn't stop.
Yeah.
It must get worse.
Yeah.
And so just kind of thinking, like, for the people who jump ship and are like, my experience getting a PhD was so bad for my mental well-being that I need to not continue. Mm-hmm. Thinking about, like, for those who did, like, how bad is your mental yeah. well-being now after, you know, the hazing of, because it doesn't stop there. Then you go through the whole tenure thing
yeah.
and junior yeah. faculty. And so.
Yeah. And then, I mean, publishing all the while where, like,
yeah.
you know, we, reviewers, when you're trying to submit an article to a journal, like, I feel like they take out a lot of their frustrations on you because, I mean, so just to give a little bit of context for what I'm talking about. So when you're in academia, you are constantly doing research and using that research to write articles that you submit to journals. And that's the way that you get any kind of, like, recognition is by getting these articles published by the journal. So when you submit the article, you submit it blind, so they don't know who you are, they don't know your name, they don't know what university you're affiliated with, and then they review the article blind, so you don't know who they are either, which allows them to just go in on you, tearing your work to shreds because they can. You don't know who they are. It's not like you could email them after and be like, dang, I can't believe you went in on me like that. You know, and so I don't know, it's just like the process doesn't stop. The cycle doesn't stop. So, yeah, like, I think you're probably right. I think that faculty probably do have some
stuff going on. Yeah, we probably find high rates of anxiety and depression among faculty.
Definitely.
So our next story is about the migrant caravan. And I know we've touched on this, but it's because there's been several migrant caravans, and apparently another one just started. So,
oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I think that it's going to. But it's at this point, you just can't trust the media. So I don't know if that's the media fear-mongering and being like, they're
never stopping.
It's never stopping. But so for those of you who haven't been keeping up with the news or are just kind of not sure what I'm talking about, you know, in a couple episodes ago, we talked about how the migrant caravan was headed here. And we did say that by mid-November, they would arrive to the border, and they have. And so just recently, there was video and pictures released of the U.S. military throwing tear gas at the migrant caravan, which included women and children, which really got a lot of people angry, because usually, I mean, but, you know, if you watch protests, Black Lives Matter protests, and the police and the military are not, it's not uncommon for them to use tear gas and violence and force against civilians. But just the pictures just really did make it look really bad because there's so many women and children that are a part of this caravan. And so, of course, this sparked up a lot of conversation about, like, well, should they even be putting themselves in this position? I read a lot of people and heard a lot of people saying, well, if I was a mom, I wouldn't, you know, it's the mom's fault for putting their children in that position. But it's just kind of like, you know, the tear gas is thrown at the crowd. You don't really have to be, like, really close to be impacted. And so just one of the most, wanted to highlight a couple of the most recent things about this, because, you know, this is not an episode about the immigration controversy, because that would take a whole episode.
Or several.
Yeah. But just Trump's response to this was that that tear gas is not quote unquote that bad. Although there has been evidence that shows that it does have, it does impact and impair your lungs. Mm. And then people who have been victims of tear gas have talked about how the effects linger more than just like 30 minutes, like for a couple of days after you're actually feeling like your lungs are like they actually hurt. Mm. And so I wanted to comment on Geraldo Rivera, who is kind of controversial because he's one of those Fox people that like has a talk show. So he's not really famous for being a political commentator. He's more famous for being famous. But Fox uses him a lot because he always says a lot of things that they like to hear. He's always chiming in on a lot of the Trump policies and stuff. But what was different about him this week is that he actually went against what most of the people on Fox were saying. And so Fox is trying to make this a story about blaming the media. And like, is it the media's fault that they're getting people false information? And they're saying like, they're only showing the women and children getting gassed, but they're not showing the violent men that are attacking the military and throwing rocks at them and being violent against the police. So if the media was more honest and showed that, then people would see, oh, it makes sense why they're throwing tear gas. That's what Fox is saying. Mm-hmm. And so Geraldo Rivera went on this rant, and he just, you know, started talking about, he said, "I refuse to deal with this as a media issue because it's far too important. This is something that goes to the very, it goes to my soul, fulfilling my role as the des-" He said, "fulfilling my role as a designated piñata on Fox News, I'm ashamed." Mm. So what was good is that he recognized, like, in the, his comment, like, I know I'm here, and as, like, just a tool, as a ploy to mm-hmm. say things that you guys like to hear. But then he went on to say, "This tear gas choked me. We treat these people like economic refugees. We treat these people, these economic refugees, as if they're zombies from The Walking Dead. I think we arrested 42 people. 8 of them were women with children. We have to deal with this problem humanely and with compassion. These are not invaders. Stop using these military analogies. This is absolutely painful to watch. This is, we are a nation of immigrants. These are desperate people. They walked 2,000 miles. Why? Because they want to rape your daughter or steal your lunch? No. Because they want a job. They want to fill the millions of unfilled jobs we have in the agricultural sector. They want to wash dishes in restaurants. They want to deliver the pizzas. For goodness sake, we suspend our humanity when it comes to the issue, and I fear that it is because they look different than we do." And so it was just kind of, you could tell by the other person sitting next to him that they were not expecting him to disagree and have this reaction. Yeah. And so it was just kind of, although I don't think that this, like, pardons Geraldo for all the other stupid shit that he says, I do think it's, like, kind of nice every once in a while when you see someone, like, have a conscience.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that what Geraldo is saying is, like, this isn't just about, this is a bigger conversation than, like, immigration policy. This is a bigger conversation. Like, it's not a conversation about how to fix immigration policy, how to do this, how to do that. It's about, like, we shouldn't be using violence and force against these unarmed people.
Yeah.
And even if they were throwing rocks, like, you don't, I think it's actually code that you don't respond with violence, with deadly violence. Mm-hmm. If it's, even if they're throwing rocks. And so Trump, I think, recently had said that it is okay to do that. And I read a lot of people in the military commenting to that and saying, like, this is actually, like, terrible. Like, yeah. We don't do this even when we are, like, in the Middle East. Like, this is not a policy that we go by. And to do this here is just, like,
yeah,
kind of shitty. And so just wanted to highlight that and, you know, also highlight my disappointment among Mexicans in Mexico who are just showing a lot of xenophobia against the Central Americans. And I think it's like a spillover of Trump in Mexico where they're using the same types of excuses of like, well, they're criminals, like, they're the worst of the worst, like, they're dirty, they're ungrateful, we don't need them here, this is our country, we don't need invaders, we don't need, you know, these other people coming from different countries. And so just kind of like highlighting that, you know, we've talked about this in a couple episodes past, where, you know, in our just because you're brown doesn't mean you're down. And I think that sometimes it's we as Latinos specifically, this message is for like my other Latinos, it's like we just assume that because we're all Latinos that we're all going to be on the same side. And I think that that's why we saw so many Latinos voting for Ted Cruz and so many Latinos voting for Republicans and so many Latinos voting for Donald Trump. And I think that if we don't recognize this division that is happening within us, then we might have even more Latinos voting, re-electing Trump in the future. And so we need to be really careful in the conversations that we have and kind of confront other Latinos who are saying xenophobic things, because even though there's an issue of can people of color be racist, and I think like people of color can definitely say racist things. Mm-hmm. And so when you hear people say these untrue or unfounded things or say things like, well, they deserve it, they shouldn't be putting their children there to begin with, you kind of have to call them out and say, you sound very similar to Trump. And if that's like, if you're okay with that, then that's a, like a whole different conversation that we need to be having among this community. So just really wanted to highlight that, because I don't think sometimes that Latinos call each other out for this. I think we turn the other way, especially Mexicans. We're like, as long as it's not about us, then this isn't my conversation. Or, you know, it's easier to jump on the dominant group side and be like, well, you know, yeah, Central Americans are doing this bad. This isn't about my group, so I'm not affected or impacted. Yeah.
But I think that the, you know, one thing is that they're very, I mean, one thing that, so this is me from an, like, as an outsider speaking, but I think that one thing that Mexican Americans or people that are the children of immigrants should keep in mind is that for a lot of white America, they don't know the difference between this Central American or this caravan being from Central America or being comprised of Central Americans versus Mexicans. They don't know the difference, you know? And so to them, everybody from Central America is the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like brown is brown. And so I think that that's something to be wary of too. And is that it doesn't make a difference to them.
You know?
And so we might, you know, and I mean, black people say that all the time. Like the difference between black people with money and black people without is like, to the cops, you all look the same. So, you know, I think that that's one thing to keep in mind. And I think that also, I mean, as racism and xenophobia continues to be so explicit, we're going to see more people of color in predominantly white spaces speaking up like this, which is a good thing. You know, people that have kind of just, you know, gone along with the status quo in the past or, you know, said really problematic things. I think that we're going to be seeing more and more of this. And I'm thinking about that reporter. I can't remember what daytime show he was on, but where he spoke out about the kneeling and, stuff. And and the people, his co-hosts looked at him like, what are you talking about? You know?
Yeah.
And it caught them off guard. But I think that that kind of stuff is necessary, because then they say messages that get in front of the people that, you know, predominantly minority shows or predominantly minority spaces don't. Like, we, you know, white racist people are not listening to us right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and so really, if we want to get in front of people that watch Fox News, then we need people on Fox News to be able to, you know, to speak out. And I mean, it's a risk, but it's necessary. It's a necessary evil.
And so the next thing, is that just wanted to update. We talked about racist Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith. If you recall, we talked about how she made the joke about lynching and how she was endorsed by Trump. Just wanted to update everyone and tell everyone that she definitely got reelected. And so, although the highlight of this was that the Democrat didn't lose by, you know, it wasn't like a huge landslide, but it was still like, oh wow, like Mississippi doesn't give it. The majority of Mississippi doesn't care that she's racist.
Nope. They're actually, that is what motivated them to vote for her.
Yes.
Oh, she's racist? Yes. Give me more, please.
And so I think, like, you know, it's just things to, people of color don't need to be reminded that people are racist. Yes. But I think every once in a while, like, to remind white people or the white allies and be like, you know, how surprised and shocked you are about, like, oh my gosh, that's terrible. She's such a terrible person, and yet she got elected. It's like, yes, welcome to our lives. Like, where you see terrible people, like, do terrible things, and you have no option but just to continue to live your life. And you see injustice all the time, every day, in your communities, on TV, and you feel this helplessness. Like, that's a little bit of what it's like to feel marginalized. And so, if anything, I think that, you know, it helps white people who are allies feel a little tinge of what it's like to be part of a marginalized community and to see all these terrible things happen and to feel like, wow, I just, like, people just don't care and people are racist.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice. I think it's like, you know, keep in mind, I think that it's nice to know that social media is allowing for a lot of these bridges where a lot of white folks did not get information like this. Yeah. But because of social media, it kind of, I don't want to say unifies, but it allows for information to be disseminated in a different way. And it's not like, oh, only people, like, it's not, it doesn't stay just within this, like, echo chamber,
yeah.
you know? And so, but like Zelma is saying, like, for y'all that are just recognizing how racist and effed up stuff is, like, we've known our whole lives and we no longer lose sleep over it because you can't. Like, if that's the case, you'd never sleep.
Yeah.
Okay, so our, like, y'all have probably, well, by the time this episode airs, you will have heard about this, but Deontay Wilder versus reporter Radio Raheem. Yeah. So in a short interview, Radio Raheem asked Wilder what he meant by his earlier statement that his people have been fighting for 400 years. And so Wilder immediately went off, right? And so he said, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about, man. Don't sit up here and try to bait me. You know what the F I'm talking about when I say these things. You're people too. And so he was upset because of Radio Raheem's use of his. Like, what do you mean by when you say that, or what do you mean when you say your people?
Mm-hmm.
And so he, Wilder sort of went off explaining what he meant by the statement, but not really. Like, he would explain and then be like, you know what I mean. I shouldn't have to explain this, and then explain. He even snatched his glasses off at one point, and I thought that he was gonna hit him, and be arrested. but the question that, you know, it kind of left me with is, well, was he wrong for going off? And, or not even was he wrong, but like, was he right or wrong in his perspective, you know, and like the reason, in his motivations for going off? Because ultimately what he was trying to underscore is that, like, these are, like, you're black too. Why are you trying to create this division between us as though we don't come from the same place? And it isn't, and it wasn't, like, both of our people that were enslaved, both of our people that experienced Jim Crow, both of our people that have experienced all these atrocities over the year, over the last 400 years.
Yeah.
And so I know that we have previously had episodes where we talked about, like, you know, how our communities, black and brown, might be divided along certain lines, you know, class lines, maybe education, and things like that. And so I guess I was just wondering, like, what could have been a better way that he could have gotten his point across? Or did there need to be a better way? Why might Radio Raheem have been trying to create this division? I've heard other people say, like, oh, he's a reporter, he's just doing his job. But I think that there could have been a different way of going about it.
Yeah. The background is that, so he's a boxer.
Yeah.
And apparently there was, like, some issue where he felt that he was being treated differently because he was black,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was just kept, you know, extending that by saying, well, we've just been oppressed for so long and it continues to this day.
Yeah.
And so I think he was already upset about that. And then, you know, to have the black reporter ask him to specify what he meant.
Yeah.
And so what I've been like, because I love seeing what people on social media say about
stuff
like this. And so there was like some people who were saying, well, he's a journalist. He was just doing his job. Mm-hmm. And I even went on Radio Raheem's Instagram mm-hmm. to see what he said about it. And he put two posts, and the first post was not the clip that we see. It was a different clip. And he put in the caption what it was that he was saying. And he was definitely, he went more in depth about like what he was talking about and how people to this day are still oppressed and how he doesn't understand why it's so different. And then there's that video that everyone's choosing to circulate. And I think it's just because it just speaks to the genuine feelings of someone when they're confronted by things, like in today's age, you're confronted by people being ignorant about racial issues all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he just lost his shit because it was another black person, like, doing the, I think if it was a white person, he wouldn't have gotten, he still would have been like you know, you can look up Google. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But I think that because it was another black man that he, like, went super hard. Yeah. And I think, and it's, I read that he afterwards on his Instagram, the journalist on his Instagram page said that they had a one-on-one interview after.
Oh, okay. And, well, that's good.
Yeah, and they were able to kind of talk things through. And then one of the captions he had was a misunderstanding. Mm. And so I think that if any, the journalist didn't, like, take it to yeah. like, personal. But I also do think, like, when I saw that, I was just like, that is me in the inside so much.
Yeah.
Like, when I talk to people, like, that's exactly how I want to respond. But I agree that I don't think you can respond that way and not be. And what was the, was this in The Hate U Give? Or I saw this somewhere where it was like, you can't be angry because when you're a person of color, you can't be angry because then people don't listen to your message. They just listen to the way it was delivered.
Yeah.
And so it's yeah. just kind of like a lot of white people,
yeah.
because I looked in the comments and these were mostly white people who were on the, I think that he was just being too aggressive. I think that he was responding in a way that was over the top for what the other guy was doing. And it's yeah. just kind of like, you know, that's exactly what we don't want to happen, is for people to not take away the, well, he's this angry because he feels an injustice and he yeah. feels like it's been happening for hundreds and hundreds of years, as opposed to, oh, he's just an angry black guy and he should really control his temper, mm-hmm. even though people are okay with boxers losing their shit, yeah. like, not even in the ring, but just in general. People love seeing fighters yeah. lose
now
their
it's
shit.
About race, though.
Yeah, but when it's about race, then we don't want him to lose yeah. his shit there.
Yeah. No, that's a point that we made earlier on in the podcast when we were talking about, like, our beefs with the woke movement and, like, how certain groups, like, are so, you know, like, the way that certain groups, the way that they treat white people in their spaces, like Black Lives Matter and stuff like that. And maybe the aggression or not letting certain groups speak. So no, I do, I, it's like I'm in this instance, because it was a black man, I was like, I felt like, you know, it didn't strike me as like, oh, this is too much or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that I probably would have felt differently if it were a white man, you know, because it would be like, okay, maybe I mean, I feel like to a certain degree, white people have some ignorance. Like, they don't mm-hmm. have to walk around every day in your shoes. Like, they don't live and breathe blackness, you know? So, but for a black man, I was like, okay, I get where he's coming from. Granted, he's also a reporter and he was probably just asking this question to be provocative,
yeah.
not like, oh, I really don't understand. But yeah, I mean, it also is interesting to have him get so emotional when race is always, I mean, as far as the boxing, as far as much as I know about boxing, right? I have seen, say, whenever there is a black and white, when there are black and white opponents going up, like, say, the McGregor and Mayweather, like, there was racial, like, tones all up and through that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they were constantly making this deal about, like, asking Mayweather how he felt about McGregor calling him boy and
yeah.
stuff like that. So it's not that this is, like, it's not that boxing, that race is never present in boxing, you know?
Yeah.
That's a regular thing. So I guess I was just like, why would, like, you know, he got so mad at this particular instance, and I recognize it's because the reporter was black. But, like, was that valid?
Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay, so last on the docket, we wanted to use, or we wanted to draw on the very sad passing of Kim Porter a couple weeks ago to talk about the experiences of women of color and Black women in particular dealing with doctors and physicians.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that one of the storylines that's circulating is that Kim Porter. So for those of y'all who don't know, Kim Porter was the I think maybe ex-wife or former partner and mother of several of Puff Daddy's children. And so she passed away on November 15th, sort of suddenly. So she, I think maybe had, I should have gotten these facts together. Maybe it was pneumonia or something like that.
Yeah.
So she passed away of some complications of pneumonia, but it's also circulating that she had gone to the doctor a few days prior, to passing away and had been sent home, by her doctor, kind of telling her that, like, she was fine or that nothing was wrong. And then, you know, she eventually passed away. And so Zelma and I got into a conversation about maternal mortality and just generally the experiences of Black women in, you know, dealing with, like, physicians and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm a health researcher, so I specifically look at the differences between the experiences of women and men, and in particular, the differences in the experiences of women of color. And what we find, or what researchers have found, is that Black women are less likely to be believed out of anyone in terms of how they feel, the extent of how they're feeling. And so we've talked about this in one of our episodes, but in pulling from the example of maternal mortality, which we bring up a lot because it's actually, like, pretty shocking that in one of the most developed countries where we have a lot of the technology available to keep women alive, we have such high rates of Black women across class. So it doesn't matter if you're poor. This isn't a poor thing. This is a Black women thing. And so Black women are bleeding out. And so after you have a baby, it's really important for the up to a year after you have the baby to go to the doctor to get checked, because the most common way that women die through postpartum complications or during labor and delivery is by bleeding out. And you know, me being pregnant, I read so much about the importance of, you know, because you bleed for a long time after you have a baby, because your body's basically, like, flushing out a lot of things. But the scary part is that if you're not super aware, you can bleed out too much to the point that you're hemorrhaging and you don't realize it. So, you know, technically you bleed for six weeks after you have your baby. But if you're hemorrhaging 6 weeks of bleed, like, you could die. And so Black women, when they go to the doctor and they tell their doctor, I think I'm bleeding more than I should, or I don't feel so good, the doctors don't pay attention and the women end up hemorrhaging and dying. And so that's one of the reasons why there's such higher mortality rates among Black women. So it's not really like there's no technological access to these women, or they can't afford to see, like, they're going to the doctors, they're going to tell them how they feel. But once they tell them, the doctors either don't believe them or minimize how they're feeling. And so Ebony and I were talking about how there's also evidence about how people of color view people in authority. So, like, professors or police or doctors, and how we're not taught to question people in authority. Yeah. We're taught to just listen and say, okay, fine. If you say I'm okay, then I must be okay. Yeah. Even if your instinct tells you, I don't think I'm okay, I think I'm bleeding a lot. And so I would not be surprised that the same thing happened to her, where even though she's this very wealthy woman, this, you know, with famous connections, she went to her doctor and told them, I don't feel well, my chest hurts, or I'm not feeling as good as I should. And they just minimized it and sent her home, which contributed to her having cardiac arrest at, like, 47 years old. Yeah. And so I think that her death highlights that it isn't just, a lot of people point to the, it's because you're poor, or it's because you live in a country that doesn't have good medical advances, or it's because you didn't go to the doctor, or it's because you don't have a healthy lifestyle, or it's because it's on you. But this shows that, like, it doesn't matter how rich or famous you are, or how much access you have to medical care. The thing that boils down to is, if you're a person of color, particularly a Black woman, you have to voice yourself twice as loud. And so I think, like, for us just wanting to share this to people is just to say, like, unfortunately, for Black women particularly, you have to be very, 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 very persistent and uncomfortably vocal about how you feel. So even if, like, the doctor tells you, you're okay and you don't feel okay, like, and you of course are going to be stereotyped as an angry black woman or like as just whatever. It's
hypochondria.
Yeah, like, at the end of the day,
being insistent.
Yeah, at the end of the day, there are too many women that die unnecessarily, and we are telling you that research shows that you are less likely to be believed because you are a black woman.
And my recommendation would be, I mean, my recommendation always is to have a black, you know, gyno. Like, have a black doctor in general. Because, I mean, that eliminates a lot of the discomfort that I think that a lot of women feel in going to the doctor in general. Yeah. So if you have someone that you feel comfortable with, someone that, where it can kind of, level out a lot of that, you know, a lot of those cultural differences and things like that, then that is all the better. You know, someone where the notion of high maternal mortality among black women is not new to them. Like, this is something that your doctor should be aware of and should be able to talk about combating with you, you know, I don't know, like directly combating with you, and not something that you should have to bring up or, you know, anything like that. So,
yeah,
I mean, we just wanted to, you know, knowing this information, to throw this out there so that if there is anybody that has that does have this experience with their doctors, you know, this is some new information, and maybe you can draw on this information to find a different doctor.
Yeah.
Or, you know, talk this through with your doctor.
Yeah. And I think Ebony's point is really great. If you're like me, you don't like confrontation, and you're like, I don't want to yell at my white male doctor about how he has to listen to me. Like, that's exactly why I have a black guy now, because I specifically sought out, like, I filtered black female OBGYN because I want, and there's not that many, but, you know, you'll find at least one or two. And in my first meeting with her, I said, I came here because of the high mortality rates and I'm really scared about it. And she wasn't like, what? No. Yeah. She totally understood, and it eliminates the whole, like, okay, she's going to understand me, and it wasn't uncomfortable. And she herself, as a black woman, like, understands my fear and my anxiety. And I'm Latina. And so I would really suggest that, to just try to find black providers, because that will cut out the whole, like, oh, gosh, now I have to gear myself. Because it can be emotionally taxing to, like, confront authority. But just wanted to share that story and to share the research behind that story and to just pass around that suggestion so that you can share with your family, especially a particularly black woman, and we can just keep each other safe.
Yeah. Okay, so now moving on to our What's Being Slept On segment.
So I strongly suggest that you wake the fuck up.
So now for our What's Being Slept On segment, we will be answering the question, do I need to have a woke holiday?
Yes.
So Thanksgiving just passed.
Yeah.
Christmas is coming up. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of the conversation around Thanksgiving is like, oh my gosh, like, should I celebrate?
Yeah.
If I'm a person that understands the history of what Thanksgiving is, should I be telling people Happy Thanksgiving? Who can I tell Happy Thanksgiving? If you tell somebody Happy Thanksgiving and they come at you and say, I don't celebrate that colonizer's holiday.
Yeah.
You know, how do you respond? Or are you that person that are like, no, I don't celebrate this colonial holiday where, you know, white folks came over on the three ships and killed all the Native Americans.
Yeah.
And then, like, how woke is too woke? Like, are you someone that just suspends all of that for the holidays and you, like, don't care, you don't want to hear it, you're eating your Thanksgiving food, you're celebrating with your family? Which I personally, I mean, I wasn't with my family for Thanksgiving, but I would celebrate Thanksgiving with my family. Not necessarily for the, you know, oh, this is Thanksgiving, but because this is, like, one of few times a year that we come together and cook. And
people get off work.
Yeah, talk about why we're thankful. It has nothing to do with the white folks that came over and killed a bunch of Native Americans and then later enslaved my people. Like, no. So, I mean, is it necessary to be woke on the holidays? What do you think?
So, I consider myself, like, you know, we call this podcast woke-ish. I consider myself woke-ish, but I did not text out or post on my Instagram, like,
Thanksgiving post.
And did you think about it? Is it something
that yes, you thought? Yes, I was like, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to be attacked. And all I did is I posted a picture of my family and I said, thankful for family.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for the same reasons, I, you know, we get together on Thanksgiving because everyone in my, most people in my, well, a lot of people in my family have, like, jobs that they only get certain days off a year. And one of those days happens to be Thanksgiving because it's like a national holiday. And so we were all like,
yeah, that's a thing.
We were all able, like my uncle who worked so much had that day off. So we were able to have dinner with him. If it wasn't for Thanksgiving being a holiday during the week, I wouldn't be able to see him because he works weekends too.
Yeah.
And so my brother who works in customer service got the day off. And, you know, my sister who's a caseworker got the day off. So it was just like, and then school's off. And so it's just, it's one of the only days where you actually get time together. And so I really actually look forward to Thanksgiving every year because it's time to be around my family. But then I also get that whole like going on Facebook and seeing a lot of people, especially like the super woke people talking about how, you know, don't forget on this day what you're really, you know, and then like all the PETA people being like, don't forget on this day how many turkeys are dying for you to have your meal. And
it's I hear those.
It's just kind of like feeling guilty on all sides about just why I shouldn't be celebrating it. But I think, you know, I don't celebrate it to celebrate the pilgrims and the Native Americans, but I do celebrate it to spend time with family. But even though I am firm in my, like, I'm doing it for this reason, I am not going to post it on social media or Facebook because I don't want to have a conversation with someone being like, oh, so I guess we're only woke, you know, on non-major holidays, or so I guess you're taking a break from the woke, and so... I don't know. I really just didn't post any stuff like that to avoid it. But the part of me was like, ooh, is this bad? Like, is my woke card being taken away because I don't?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe I'm over the top, but like, I, at the bottom of my, like, what I'm thankful for post, you know, did say, like, I just want to throw this out there. You know, I know that y'all are on your soapboxes right now. All the woke people are on their soapboxes talking about Thanksgiving. But no black people care about a pilgrim, a Nina, Pinta, or a Santa Maria. Nobody cares. You know, that information was forced down our throats in elementary school. And so if I were in town, I would have cooked. That would have been what it was. That's it. It would have been cooking and enjoying the fact that we are not at school or not at work or that people have this day off, you know, which is rare. And so it's like, am I gonna have this day off and sit around and be woke and, you know, just, I'm not cooking. No, it's like, we're gonna do it. So you and I, so Zelma and I have a Native friend in common where I almost, like, just out of habit, you know, saying, like, happy whatever holiday or merry whatever holiday, I had to stop myself mid-typing, like, Ebony, what are you doing? It was like, if nobody is celebrating Thanksgiving, definitely not the natives.
Saying happy holiday, it's like, no. Like, even if you use different words,
it doesn't do it. It's like, no. Why? Just don't acknowledge it. Act like this day doesn't exist. Or do the whole, like, you know, because I know for Columbus Day, we've switched it up. All the woke folks have switched it up recently and do, like, Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. So I guess that could be a thing, too.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep with the strategy of just not saying. And then I'm sorry, but my family doesn't have a lot of opportunities where we're all off on the same day.
Exactly. You know, and I wonder too, like, how people that, because I, strangely enough, I have been to black churches and have seen pictures of white Jesus. And I wonder how they reconcile that. Like, why is that still a thing, you know? And so, as you know, for all the folks that did go to church that weekend, or you know, do the or go to church regularly in general, like, I'm wondering if any of y'all have you know, if any of y'all's churches have pictures of white Jesus hanging, like, I would really like to know what the, like, how do you justify that? You know, like, how, I mean, even with, like, so one thing that we were going to talk about is, like, white Santa.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and as Christmas is approaching, like, do y'all have pictures of Santa hanging around? You know, how do you talk about Santa with your kids if you're people of color? Like, is Santa black? Is Santa brown? Or are you taking your kids to the mall to sit on white Santa's lap? Like, I don't know.
So I was raised really religiously. Mm-hmm. And so my Santa taught, and I always tell people, and they always tell me how fucked up it is. And I don't realize how fucked up it is until people tell me it is. But so there's this passage in the Bible where there's a prophet. There's all these different people who claim to be representatives of their gods, because there's different gods. And one of them was like the Jewish god, or the god that Christian and Jewish people refer to. And so it was like kind of a competition where they were like, okay, we're all going to call on our gods, and whoever is the real god, they will be saved, and everyone else will die. And so it's just kind of to see like who's really God. And so, of course, like in this story, the Jewish and Christian God, you know, was the real God. And so everyone else, he burned everyone else on the spot. Mm-hmm. And then his prophet was the only one that survived. Proving.
Wait, this is a story of where?
In the Old Testament. Okay. Proving that he was the real God. Mm-hmm. And so my uncle read me that story. And then he was like, so in this case, Santa is a false prophet. And he...
And is this how you learned?
That Santa wasn't real, and that Santa was, in this case, a false prophet, that were he in this situation, he would be lit on fire on the spot, because he is not a real god, but a false god, taking away, like, what Christmas is really about, which is about the birth of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really grow up believing in Santa or doing the Santa thing. So I never had this.
How old were you?
Like 6. Okay. So I didn't have the whole like sit on Santa's lap, Santa's bringing you gifts.
Yeah.
I mean, we were so poor, we didn't have a lot of gifts until we didn't have gifts until I was like in 4th grade. But thinking about my child, I told my partner that I didn't want him to believe in Santa.
Really?
And he was just kind of like, well, he should. Like, that's not something you should take away. So I'm still trying to decide what I'm going to do. And now I have to think about, like, am I going to tell him that Santa is white?
Yeah.
Or, because, you know, there is a Saint Nick person who was from, like, Europe. And he was a white-looking man. And so if we are referring to that person, then yes, that person was white. But people are just thinking Santa is white because white people are, like, the majority. So part of me is like, should I, if I'm going to have my kid believe in Santa, will it be, like, Latino Santa? Because we also have, you know, Dia de los Reyes, which is when the three kings who went for in Mexico, it's on January 6th. And so we believe that the three kings that went to visit Jesus go to your house and leave you a gift. And so I'm like, okay, I'm fine doing that, but I don't want to teach my children that a white man's going to come and give you
it. Yeah, and it's like, I mean, I have heard parents who tell their kids that, like, no, Santa's not giving you these gifts, I am. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, I mean, what's the harm in that? What's the harm in your kid not believing in Santa? Because kids are going to have imaginations no matter what, you know? It's just, I mean, I don't know. But, I mean, Santa is a made-up character. And white people do have a lot of, you know, because I remember Megyn Kelly being like, oh, sorry, like, Santa's white. That's just a fact. And it's like, girl, Santa's fake. Calm down. You know? And so, I mean, they do have, like, this claim, you know, and they seem like they're holding on to it real firm. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe it is enough to tell your kid that Santa's brown, because, I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Maybe he might be at elementary school arguing with some white kid about the race of Santa. That could happen.
Yeah. I mean, more likely my kid's going to be the one telling everyone, you know, Santa's not real. And
maybe that's what the issue is. Maybe that's why people let their kids believe in Santa, because they don't want them to ruin it for other kids. Or maybe you could tell your kid that it's a secret. I'm going to tell you a little secret. You can't, this is just between us, you can't tell anybody else. You know, and then maybe they'll feel like, maybe he'll feel like, oh, okay, I know, I have this little secret between me and mommy, you know? I don't know, because that is kind of jacked up. If other parents do want their kids to believe in it, and then your kid's the one
Will be like, if he's anything like me, he'd be like, well, my mama said that Santa isn't real.
So that is hard. Yeah, I don't know.
I think I still have a couple of years, but like, my partner's family is all about, like, the kids believe in Santa, and they take them to take pictures, and I'm kind of
I still think Santa is cool.
But they're always white.
I mean, I still, like, so we, my dad actually did this thing where he would buy, like, little angels and, like, little figurines, and then we together would paint them black. So that was a thing, and then that was fun. You know, it was fun to do, and I understood why we were doing it. But I knew really young that Santa wasn't real, because I was hella nosy. And, like, so even though I would, with one of my parents, set out cookies and milk, like, I used to sneak downstairs and, like, you know, watch my parents, like, bring in the gifts, because they would bring them in and be wrapping them really late at night in the living room at, like, 4 a.m. And so I would sneak down to see, and I would see that it was them, even though they would write Santa, you know, on the gift.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I suffered at all. You know, I was just excited that I was getting gifts regardless of who they were from.
That's true.
But yeah. Okay, and so, all right, so our next question is, like, about boycotting. So,
yeah,
you know, I guess, I hadn't heard this, but apparently some people are boycotting Amazon.
Yeah, because they don't like that they chose to have their new distribution center in New York. And the CEO got, like, some huge tax break. So, essentially, he gets, like, paid to do this. And they're just kind of like, you know, how does it make sense to give corporate billion-dollar corporations a break, where a lot of people are earning, you know, a lot of poor people, middle-class people are, like, kind of economically suffering, and we don't get, like, as huge... This wouldn't happen to us. And actually, the whole, like, you get handouts is seen as bad. But yet, if you're a corporation and you get handouts, that's okay.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are like, yeah, like, boycott Amazon. Like, you know, this is a... this is just a company that I'm not going to associate myself with. And then similar with Starbucks, you know, people being like, oh, well, Starbucks, their cups say Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas. So I'm going to boycott them. So these are the
non-woke folks that are...
Yeah. And so it's just kind of like, I don't want to boycott Amazon. Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas. And some people get seriously offended about... And I think even Trump's going to probably make a big deal about how he's going to make sure to say Merry Christmas instead of Happy Holidays.
I think they're... I mean, I don't think that they're trying to be anti-Christmas. They're just trying to be inclusive.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, exactly. But, you know, some people think inclusivity is...
exclusion of
that. Yeah, exclusion of that.
He's self-righteous. Yeah, and it's like, you know, I don't know. Like, that reminds me of, like, the... And this is not funny. Actually, this is not funny at all. But I think it's ironic. So the guy that went over to that island, the North Sentinel Island.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I've always felt... So, and you know, I think this is like, I think this actually is an interesting conversation to have, because there are a lot of people out there that are both Christian and quote unquote woke, right? But, and like, that's a really hard, like, those are two hard categories to be in at the same time, you know? So, because to me, missionary work, it's always been problematic. Even when I was younger and my church was doing it, like, I felt like, why, like, this seems backward. Like, why are we doing this? Why are we adopting these, like, colonial and imperialistic, like, behaviors? You know, like, who are we to go over into somebody else's land, somebody else's country, their space, and tell them what God to believe in? Like, it's always, like, been very, like, you know, unsettling for me. So for it to be Christians that are like, no, you need to have Merry Christmas on this cup, and because you don't, I'm boycotting, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Like, why can't you let other people? Okay, there's nothing that we can do. There are people that believe in, there are Muslims that exist, there are Buddhists that exist, and so on and so on and so on. You cannot make everyone, force everyone to believe in what you believe in, period.
Yeah.
So you and me boycotting forever.
Yeah.
Because we're only going to get, the country's only going to get more inclusive.
Yeah. Or, like, how can you be so mad about a fucking cup, but not about all this other terrible shit that is happening? Trump saying, grab him by the pussy. Like, Kavanaugh being accused of sexual assault and still being sworn in. Like, throwing tear gas at children. Mm-hmm. Family separation. How can a fucking cup?
Cognitive.
Make you so, and it just that just
and they're not even real angry about it. They're just being difficult. But you know, it's only gonna last a hot second because they need their morning coffee.
I'm not boycotting Amazon, and I'm really glad Starbucks did the whole racial training thing because I love their hot chocolate. Yeah.
I mean, and as long as Amazon Prime has, Amazon has Amazon Prime and 2-day shipping, I will be a customer. So I'm sorry.
I know.
They built one of those warehouses or whatever in Compton, and it's actually if you meet somebody and they're talking about Compton and like all the new things that have happened in the last few years, that's one of the things that they brag about. It's Amazon is here. Yeah. I guess it depends on your positionality and like how you look at it, but to Compton, it's one of the claims to fame.
Okay. Yeah. So I, you know, be on the lookout for all these new woke things to boycott or woke reasons or like, you know, don't say Merry Christmas, say Happy Holiday, because what about the Jewish and Muslim and atheists and agnostics? And it's just kind of like, okay, I'm sorry, I don't, but I'm still going to put up my, you know what, now I'm just kind of like, I'll say Happy Holidays. Ugh, it's so hard. It's so hard to be woke, even in the holidays. It is.
And you know, I mean, for all the people out there that are woke than me, if I tell you Merry Christmas and you don't like it, please don't go off on me. Like, you know, just know that I'm not coming from a, I'm not trying to convert you. I'm not trying to make you Christian. It's just, you know, it's habit. It's tradition.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that this last question is pretty interesting to me because this, I think, is becoming more and more difficult over the years for people, especially under the current administration.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just so glad that I'm not a woke white person right now.
Yeah.
Because, like, oh my gosh, to have to, or in an interracial relationship.
I was about to say, like, well.
In an interracial relationship with a white person who comes from a conservative family.
Yeah.
Because those holiday conversations, I can only imagine what they're like.
And it's just kind of like, you know, for Thanksgiving, I was talking to Ebony about how, unfortunately, inevitably, the immigration talk came up about how they were, you know, his family's Republican and how they were. Oh, and they also talked about how upset they were about all those Democratic judges.
Oh, all the black ones?
Yeah. And so I was just kind of like, oh my God. But I'm just kind of like, how do we get from talking about Turkey to fucking, like, someone always, it just always comes up. And so, yeah, I used to try to have like serious conversations with people and be like, you know what you said makes me uncomfortable, or what you said isn't exactly accurate, but now what I do, and this may be because I'm like 9 months pregnant and not wanting to deal with it, but I literally just walked away as this talk was happening. I was like, you know what, I'm going to walk away, go to the bathroom, strike up a conversation with the babe, with the 3-year-old, like,
the person in here that has the most sense.
Yeah,
like, and then just no knowledge of the world.
Yeah, like, and then just, you know, and then later at the end of the night, no, it wasn't even that day. It was a couple of days later where my partner was saying something about white people and
having to feel bad or tiptoe or something, because whenever if we see something on like social media or something, then we have these conversations about it. And I was like, you do realize that at Thanksgiving, your family was talking about illegal immigration with me in the room, and I had to walk away because it was so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And it was like, he didn't even see that or realize that or, like, register that after, like, 8 years together. And so it's just kind of like, and it shut him up in terms of, oh, yeah, so I guess, like, white people feeling this way is just a glimpse of people of color feeling this way all the fucking time. But for Christmas, I'm just kind of like, oh, geez, like, you know, there's more people at Christmas, so there's more opportunity. And then you will not only get the Republicans, but then you also get the super religious people. And then it's just kind of like, so Christmas to me is a little more, because we see the more extended family. Like Thanksgiving for us, it's just the nuclear, you know, his mom, his dad, his siblings, my mom, my siblings, whereas Christmas, it's like aunts,
y'all uncles. Go together?
Yeah, go to his family during the day and then my family at night.
Oh, okay, I thought you meant like your families come together.
No, my gosh, no. No, that would be so uncomfortable. Because you would think that white people would be like, let me read the room. Okay, brown people, let me not talk about this. Nope. They literally just will have their conversations. So you don't have
your family there because of that?
Not like 90, not like 100%, but like a part of it does play that. I don't want to expose my family to those conversations. Yeah. And I don't even think that they're aware that those conversations happen. Because my sister is married to another person of color. And my brothers only hang out with Latino people. My mom, she's been more exposed to like racism and stuff, but I think if she were to hear his family talk about it, she'd be really disappointed. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of like shield my family from that and say, like, I'd rather just like confront it myself than you have to see. And I guess it's kind of sad that I'm just kind of like, and it makes it more isolated with like, and I don't know if this is just me or if this is common with other people with interfaith and interracial relationships, but just like the ways that you choose to navigate. And it's just kind of like, mm-hmm. I'd rather me just confront it myself than have my family grow this resentment towards his family. And I don't know how well they would handle it or how they would, if they would be able to get over it or how they would respond to someone talking about illegal immigration, given that my mom was undocumented herself, and that my uncle,
they know that.
Yeah, and my uncle is currently undocumented.
Like, it's not like they don't know this about you and your family. Yeah. They just don't care.
Yeah, and then just kind of being like, well, at least it's just race and not different religion. So, yeah. Like, not imagining, like, what if, you know, I was Jewish and he was Christian, and, like, what do we do about celebrating? Or, like, you don't believe in God or Jesus, and your partner does. And then you have to go to all these religious, because even like now I'm like, I got to the point where I'm old enough to tell my mom, like, we're not doing church. Because it used to be like Christmas Eve, Christmas, we'd go to church, we'd go to the service, because that's what my mom wanted to do. And I finally got old enough where I was like, I actually don't want to do this for Christmas.
Ooh, did y'all do that sunrise service?
For Easter, we used to.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I just, thinking back on that, like, it shows me that I've never been a morning person. Like, I was thinking, like, did this just happen to me? No. Like, why are we at church at 5 a.m.? Or, like, the midnight service on New Year's?
New Year's, oh, we used to do that. Gosh. Yeah, to bring in the New Year to Jesus. Yeah, I used to do that. Oh, and you would think it'd be fun because you'd be like, I'm going to be with my friends. But, like,
or, like, I get to stay
you're
up
late. Literally praying. Like, they want you to pray in the New Year. And so you're like, even though my friends are here, we're just separated and we're all praying. And I, like,
and my head is nodding.
Yeah. So.
Like, what? My bedtime is 10:30. Keep that same energy.
Like, oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, I guess as I get older, I find strategies to keep my woke-ishness to, like, a comfortable space.
Yeah.
But I definitely am more aware that I am not as woke as other people are during the holidays. And
Yeah. I mean, one thing that, like, we were talking about before is that, you know, a lot of my, like, you know, views on gender and stuff get ignored, silenced, or whatever around the holidays, especially around my family, where, you know, the expectation is that as the woman, I make my partner's plate, and I make my partner's plate before I make mine, and, you know, things like that, whereas, you know, if we're at home, it's like, get up and make your plate, you know? Or I mean, even if we're at home, sometimes I will make the plate, but it's not that it's the expectation because I'm the woman, you know? So those are certain things that also change during the holidays, which I've gotten into the practice of kind of just, you know, going with the flow of, and, you know, it's like, okay, this is one of two times a year where I am the woman.
Yeah.
My views about gender.
Yeah. Now, when I'm around my mom, I suspend my views.
Yeah.
Maybe you guys don't have my mom. So if you had my mom, you would be more understanding. But, like, believe me, it is easier to
And it's like, you know what, let me just have my peace. I'm going to make this play real quick. You know, I'll gripe about it later, but for now I'm going about my business. But yeah, if y'all have any, you know, interesting holiday experiences, definitely feel free to write in and let us know. We would love to hear them. And thanks for listening. That wraps up our episode 31 of the Woke-ish podcast. You can follow us and all of those things on all of our social media outlets that we plug every week. Again, I just want to reiterate that, you know, if you, if we happen to go on a hiatus, and maybe I'll try to make a short announcement about it whenever this happens, but soon, very soon, Selma will be having a baby.
Yeah.
And we will be taking a short break.
Yeah. Just in case he comes early.
Yeah.
We'll make an announcement and be like,
baby break.
Yeah. Baby break's happening earlier. Yeah. But our plan is to keep recording until, I think we have like two more episodes planned to record until we take our break. But if he comes early, then we will definitely put something on our Instagram. Maybe even upload that to Anchor so that it could go up, like, as an episode. And, you know, it'll just be a short break. And although I am going on leave, I'm not going on leave from the podcast. I'm just going to take a little break until he's good enough to be on his own for, like, enough time so I can record this podcast. But, yeah, if you have any questions, issues, comments, please email us at woke.ishpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, follow us on Instagram at wokeishpodcast. We'd love to hear what you have to say. Thank you so much for those who keep listening to us. We love seeing how many plays we get, and all our followers and our new followers. And just, you know, we hope that you continue to listen and you tell your friends.
All right. Bye.
Bye.